Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, deinem Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so sehr, dass du da bist, heute mit einer Podcast-Folge, die mir sehr am Herzen liegt, denn ich durfte die wundervolle Christina Mittermeier interviewen und ich folge Christina schon seit ein paar Jahren auf Instagram. Sie ist Fotografin für National Geographic und Earth und sie ist die Mitgründerin von Sea Legacy, was eine NGO ist, die das Ziel hat, unsere Ozeane und die Lebewesen in unseren Meeren zu beschützen. Und Christina macht einfach unfassbare Fotos. Sie ist Aktivistin und sie ist einfach eine fantastische, inspirierende Frau. Und ich habe sie jetzt endlich im Podcast gehabt. Ich habe das Interview noch aufgenommen, während ich in Maui war und freue mich jetzt sehr, es mit dir teilen zu können. Und in dem Gespräch mit Christina erfährst du, warum es so wichtig ist, dass wir nicht unsere Augen verschließen, wenn wir sehen, was in der Welt passiert, sondern dass wir dafür einstehen, etwas zu verändern. Was wir tun können, wenn wir keine Hoffnung mehr haben, weil man manchmal ja auch das Gefühl hat, es ist so viel Schmerz in der Welt und es passieren einfach so viele schreckliche Dinge, dass man sich am liebsten selbst irgendwie in ein Erdloch verkriechen möchte. Aber das hilft natürlich keinem. Also ich spreche mit Christina darüber, was können wir tun, wenn wir das Gefühl haben, die Hoffnung zu verlieren. Wir sprechen darüber, welche kleinen täglichen Entscheidungen in jedem Leben einen Unterschied machen und warum jeder Einzelne und jede Einzelne von uns die Power hat, die Welt zu verändern. Und genau darum geht es in dem Interview mit Christina Mittermeier. Und ich freue mich sehr, wenn du ganz viel daraus für dich mitnehmen kannst. Und ja, es geht darum, warum jeder etwas in dieser Welt bewirken kann. Und das Interview ist auf Englisch. Wir haben aber wie immer eine deutsche Übersetzung. Die findest du bei mir auf dem Blog und die findest du einfach in dem YouTube-Video in den Untertiteln. Das heißt, du kannst es dir immer auch auf Deutsch quasi mitlesen und ja, wünsche dir ganz, ganz, ganz viel Freude, ganz viel Inspiration mit dieser Folge und freue mich natürlich wie immer, wenn du mir danach bei @LauraMarlinaSeiler auf meinem Instagram-Account schreibst, was du für dich mitgenommen hast und ja, was du vielleicht gerne in der Welt verändern möchtest. Wofür möchtest du einstehen? Was möchtest du verändern? Und bevor es jetzt losgeht, zwei wundervolle Neuigkeiten. Das erste ist, du kannst dich jetzt endlich für Löwenherz anmelden. Ich habe ja schon so viel davon erzählt. Löwenherz ist mein neuer Online-Kurs zum Thema Vergebung. Es ist ein sehr intensiver Kurs, aber ein sehr powervoller Kurs, wo es wirklich darum geht, in allen Bereichen deines Lebens Frieden zu schaffen, Freude zu schaffen, innerlich dich wieder zu vervollständigen und deine Schöpferkraft wirklich vollkommen zu aktivieren. Und es haben sich schon tausende von Menschen angemeldet. Das Feedback ist so schön. Und du hast jetzt einfach die Möglichkeit, dich auch anzumelden. Den Link findest du in den Shownotes. Und dann haben wir jetzt am Wochenende, am 25. und 26. findet unser Team Liebe Wohnzimmer-Event statt. Das ist ein Online-Event. Eigentlich wollten wir das offline machen, hatten ja auch alle schon geplant. Aber Corona hat uns da auch einen Strich durch die Rechnung gemacht, aber wir wollten es nicht ausfallen lassen. Deswegen gibt es jetzt ein Online-Event für die Community, von der Community mit ganz tollen Keynote-Speakern. Stefanie Stahl ist dabei, Tobi Beck ist dabei, Lars Ahmed ist dabei, InQ ist dabei, Sina ist dabei, die ihr ja ganz viele von euch schon kennen, die wieder Yoga machen wird. Wir haben Live-Köchinnen mit dabei, wo ich mich auch schon unglaublich darauf freue. Lynn ist da mit dabei. Und wir haben ganz viele Workshops aus der Community für die Community. Das heißt, Menschen, die wundervolle Dinge in ihrem Leben machen, haben die Möglichkeit, dort Workshops zu geben und du kannst einfach mit dabei sein, du kannst jetzt alles reinziehen. Ich werde mit dabei sein, ich werde Workshops geben, es wird Live-Q&As mit mir geben, wir werden wundervolle Musik haben und es ist wirklich ein ganzes Wochenende voller Input, voller Inspiration, voller Empowerment für dich und ja, du kannst dich dazu auch immer noch anmelden, den Link findest du in den Shownotes und wenn du dich anmeldest, hast du auch die Möglichkeit, ein Ticket zu kaufen, wo du dann ein Jahr lang Zugriff hast auf alle Inhalte. Das heißt, wenn du das Wochenende es nicht schaffst, die ganze Zeit dabei zu sein, was natürlich auch vollkommen okay ist und verständlich ist, dann hast du die Möglichkeit, dir das auch später noch anzuschauen, was natürlich ziemlich cool ist. In diesem Sinne, wenn du da gerne dabei sein möchtest, den Link dazu findest du natürlich auch in den Shownotes. Und ich wünsche dir jetzt ganz viel Freude mit der neuen Podcast-Folge, warum jeder etwas auf der Welt bewirken kann, mit der wundervollen Christina Mittermeier. Ganz viel Freude. I am
so grateful to have the opportunity today to speak to Christina Mittermeier. And it's really crazy because I've been like trying to get the interview with you for a year now. So yeah, I'm so happy that we see each other here now on Zoom. And thank you for your time. Thank you for being on the show.
Laura, it's an honor, and I am so thrilled and happy to be here. It's exciting, and you're probably the only person who's ever interviewed me who said my last name correctly. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Well, it's easy for me because I'm German, and I think it's a, like probably a German, some when it was a German name. Thank you so much. I mean, we were supposed to be actually meeting in Canada because I were supposed to be now in Canada, but through Corona, obviously I'm not. I'm still on Maui. So we have our call on Zoom. And I would like to directly get started into the amazing work you do because I found you on Instagram because I always look like at pictures from the ocean and like animals and whales, and then I somehow found Miti, which is your Instagram account, and I was just, I think like for 3 hours I was just like going like a meditation through the amazing pictures you do. And how can you maybe just take us onto your story and how you became like this amazing photographer of National Geographic and the earth and the pictures you do?
Yes, absolutely. I was born in Mexico, and it's funny, my grandfather was German, but he came to Mexico as a little boy. His name was Hermann Getsch, and he never spoke German, and he never went back to Germany, but I feel a very strong kinship to Germany. Anyway, I grew up in Mexico, and I became a marine biologist, because I had this romantic idea, you know, swimming with dolphins. I think a lot of young people, you know, just in love with the ocean, with how beautiful it was. But when I went to university, the emphasis of my career was, yes, very much into understanding the ocean, but also fisheries and aquaculture. Because back in the 1980s, when I studied in university, society was really thinking, you know, how are we going to feed an ever-growing human population? And governments were turning to the ocean. So I started learning industrial fishing. And I found it horrifying. I found it very wasteful and very cruel and very short-sighted, because a lot of the fishing methods that we still use today actually destroy the ecosystem from which they harvest. And so I was looking at how big trawlers, for example, catch shrimp or prawns, and they drag these big chains across the bottom of the ocean, and they kill everything and they break everything. And then they scoop up a handful of dead animals, of which one in every 10 is a shrimp. So 10 other animals have to die for us to eat shrimp. And then the bottom of the ocean is destroyed. And I was thinking, you know, that's really stupid, because it's, imagine if you were trying to harvest squirrels in the forest with a bulldozer. It makes no sense. And I could see that the majority of people don't realize that, and they don't understand. And I wanted to communicate that. You know, I wanted to create some urgency to say, you know, we're smart humans. We can do better than this. And the answers that I was always getting is, you know, it's the bottom line. It's the cheapest way of doing it. And I thought, but it's not really cheap, because we're saddling Mother Nature with the externalities and the cost of producing food like this. It just didn't make sense to me. So I went to school to become a scientist, and I started writing scientific papers. And I've been doing a little bit of a research on, you know, how many times my work has been cited in the scientific literature, because I wanted to answer the question, if you're trying to save the planet and we have such limited resources to do it, where should we be making those investments? Should we be saving everything, or should we try to focus in areas that are really rich and special? And so anyway, I started writing these scientific papers, and it didn't take me long, Laura, to realize that most people don't really read scientific literature. It's very difficult to understand. And I started taking pictures almost by accident. I used to share an office space with somebody who was a photographer, and he invited me to contribute some of my science to his books. And it was when we launched the book and I saw how people reacted to the text versus the photographs that I first realized, you know, that people have a much easier way of understanding photography, because we're all experts. You know, we all carry especially nowadays, a device that allows us to understand the language, where science is really difficult for people to interact with. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. You know, if we really want to invite more people into the conversation of how do we protect our planet, maybe photography is a better way than science. And so that's how I started.
That's amazing. And I think it's so nice that you actually, because usually most of the scientific researchers I know, they're so in their scientific research world, and that they are not aware that no one else understands, because the language is so, like, the language is. And I think it's really, really nice that you actually found yourself a way how to reach more people with pictures. And I also think pictures usually touch the heart way more than words. Like, if I see a picture of a whale with a baby, I'm touched more than if I read about it, probably. So when was it? When did you get started to taking picture? In which year was it?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I was never one of those people that was interested in photography or cameras. I didn't know anything about photography. I started by carrying equipment for other photographers, which is the way many people start, just being an assistant and learning that way. And then slowly I started buying my own equipment. And then I realized it's very expensive, Laura, to become a photographer. So I couldn't really afford to go anywhere, but you still need to learn a lot of skills. So I started a little business in my home, taking pictures for, you know, proms and school portraits and weddings. And with that money, I used to pay for them to go and take more interesting pictures. And I started volunteering for conservation groups. And it's a long journey to become a photographer. You know, the first 10 years, you are not making any money, and you're not, you know, you're questioning whether this is going to work or not. But little by little, and it was in 1996 that I started selling enough of my work that I could actually support myself from my profession as a photographer.
So it took you 10 years from starting taking pictures until you could live from it?
Yep.
Okay, that's amazing. What like, I really want to go here for 1 second into your mindset, yeah. Because I think it's most people do it 1 year, 2 year, and then they stop because they think it's never going to work. Mm-hmm. So what mm-hmm. helped you keep going? Like, what made you finding ways how to earn money from another side job to actually be able to do what you do mm-hmm. now?
That's a great question. And that's, I think, a question that every person has to answer individually. But for me, is that I was really lucky that I was married to Herr Mittermeier. And he had a job and he could support me. And so I could dabble in the photography, and we didn't have to worry about, you know, me going to get, I mean, I was very lucky that I had a partner who could support me. And, you know, my kids were really good children. They were well behaved. They never had any health problems. They were good students, so I never really had to, you know, sacrifice very much. It was lucky, really, very lucky.
Nice. So today you are, like, most of the year traveling around the world, taking pictures from animals, from the ocean. You did found together with Paul an organization that is called Sea Legacy, which has the focus on mm-hmm. protecting the oceans. Can you tell a little bit about Sea Legacy mm-hmm. and how that gets started?
Sure. So the journey to become a National Geographic photographer is very long and very painful, because there's a lot of good photographers out there and there's a lot of competition. And it took a long, long time until we finally, I mean, Paul had been a photographer for a long time when I met him already with Nat Geo, but I wasn't. And he and I started working together. First, I was his assistant, and then I started, you know, going on assignments with him. And in 2014, we were doing a story for National Geographic on, it was called The Blob, and it was a body of water that was really warm, floating in the coast of California, the Pacific. And it was because the shape of the winds and the shape of the storms in the winter has changed with climate change. So the jet stream, which is that very large, it's an air current that's very high up in the atmosphere in the Arctic, is changing its shape. And so some winters, the storms, they don't blow. And the water was sitting on top on the surface, really warm, in some places as hot as 4 degrees warmer than it's supposed to be. And so animals were dying. The fish were going really deep where they could get away from the hot water, and marine mammals like sea lions and whales were starving. But also algae started blooming in this warm water, and it was toxic algae, and it was causing animals to die of paralytic poisoning. It was very painful to photograph this, lots of dead animals. And I remember Paul and I talking and saying, you know what, we have to do more than just take pictures for a magazine, because as wonderful as National Geographic is, it's a lot of work to produce a story. You work for 2 years and then it's on the magazine for 1 month, and then it disappears the next month and you move on to the next assignment and it's gone. And so we decided we had to start our own organization, and we started Sea Legacy. And it was, in the beginning, we didn't have any staff or any money, and all we had was our social media account. So we started just posting stories, and pretty soon we realized that people were really interested in these stories, that people were following us because not only did they like the pictures, they also really liked the little stories that we were writing. And that's how we got started, you know, and one thing has led to another and to an interest from a lot of people who gravitate towards this hopeful, inspirational message that we're trying to convey, because I believe that in order to have forward motion, we have to articulate a vision of something positive and beautiful that we can achieve. So that's how we started.
What is the vision of Sea Legacy, or what's your vision for the ocean and for the earth?
Yes, so I mean, if you look at the scientific literature, I'm going to say probably 80% is really negative, gloom and doom. A lot of the scientists are focusing on the things that we have lost, and rightfully so. Extinction is very painful. And they're focusing on the effect of these ecosystems that are unraveling. But there's a handful of scientists that are focused on, you know, how do we get back to healthy? And that's the kind of stuff that I like to read. And so recently I started collaborating with a scientist. His name is Carlos Duarte. He's with the University of Abu Dhabi. And he's a good friend of Alexandra Cousteau, who's joining the board of Sea Legacy. And Carlos wrote a beautiful paper with other authors. And the paper is, how do we restore the health of the oceans by 2050? Here's the blueprint. This is what we need to do. And so we took that, what he was outlining, and we said, what are the stories that we need to tell in order to support this idea? So that's what we're doing. we're creating
a story.
I know. Doesn't it make you feel hopeful to know that scientists are working on this? And
but can you share some of the ideas? Like what can we do to 2050 have like a healthy ocean again?
Sure. So the paper talks about six big, what they call wedges. These are six kinds of activities that we need to engage with immediately if we're going to restore the health of the ocean. For us at Sea Legacy, we know that social media is important, but we really wanted to build an interactive tool, a platform where people could come and learn about these activities through stories, and then be invited to take some actions in their daily life that can contribute to getting us there. And so we basically crafted these wedges into six journeys. And the journeys really follow, you know, something that humans are so comfortable with, and that's storytelling, the hero's journey. You know, we start here, but we need to get there. And we do it through episodic video. So a journey, for example, is called 30 by 30. We need to protect 30% of the ocean by 2030. So the goal is that, and then the journey is going to take us to Antarctica, where the international community is creating these big marine protected areas. Why is it important? But it's episodes that are funny and are emotional and are inspirational. They're character driven. You know, Paul Nicklin will guide you on a dive to see leopard seals. But then at key points, you're invited to participate, you know, and you be asked to tweet or to sign a petition or to donate. So imagine that you're watching your favorite Netflix show and the character is suffering, and then at that moment, you're given an opportunity to help. That's when people are going to be most interested in participating. The other journeys have to do with using the power of the ocean to draw down carbon from the atmosphere. All these ocean vegetation, including mangroves and seagrass and kelp, is powerful, powerful sequestration tool. So how do we protect it? How do we restore it? How do we replant it? And then we have another journey on how do we curb ocean pollution, especially plastic. It's a big story. We have another one that has to do with the role that humans play, indigenous people in coastal communities. So these six journeys are, you know, guiding us towards these big targets in conservation. And it's probably going to take us 10 years to get there, Laura. But it's going to be fun to learn, to understand that we're all part of this very large community of people who care and who are participating all the time. And I'm super excited by only one, the platform.
That's amazing. That sounds so, like, I'm not sure if I understand it correctly how it's going to work, but I see it like that you have six different stories you go into, and then you're guided like through certain topics, and you can actually help while watching, which I think is amazing. Yeah, it's so exactly. Smart.
Do you have an idea?
Yeah, I think it's amazing.
Oh, good. I'm so happy to hear that. Because sometimes you start building something and you don't really know what's it going to be like. And you get so involved in it, right? And you believe in it. But it's until you put it out there and people react that you can actually tell.
Yeah,
so I'm excited that you like
it. Yeah, I really like it. I really, really do like it. I think it's brilliant, especially that, like, when you watch the movie and then Paul says something like, yeah, now you can, like, do this and that and sign that petition, and then you actually become part of the entire story, mm-hmm. and can be a hero yourself, which was what I think is beautiful. Yeah,
that's right. So the platform is going to have every user is going to get their own dashboard, so you're going to know how many videos you've watched, how many petitions you've signed, money you've raised, how many mangroves you planted, but also how many of your friends are doing this with you and how many other people around the world. And I feel it's that sense of community and kinship that is going to propel, global action. So I find that exciting.
Yeah, I think it's really, really nice. Like, is it like, can you already be part of it? Is it already out there, or are you still working on it?
You know, it's one of those things where COVID threw us in for a loop, just like everybody else. And, you can sign up to be one of the first ones to know. You can go to www.only.one and sign your name. But we really have been delayed a little bit. So it's probably going to come out towards the end of June. I was really hopeful that it was going to be ready for World Oceans Day. But, you know, it's hard to do anything in COVID days. But everybody's super patient and very supportive. So just sign your name and hang in there. We'll be ready.
I will put the link definitely in the show notes so that everyone can sign up for it. And mm-hmm. I am curious, because you are working now for, is it now about like 20 years already as an ocean biologist? So how did the ocean change? I mean, you see it all the time. You're really in it. How did the ocean change? What is the situation right now in the ocean? And you already said there is a chance to get an ocean, a healthy ocean by 2050. But how is the situation right now? Because I think it's also important to be like very clear about how it looks right now.
Yeah, I think it's changed in some ways. It's changed for good. In other ways, it's become terrible, right? So when I was in university in 1989, I was learning the industrial process for canning sea turtle meat, if you can believe that. It was sold in grocery stores. This is, you know, only 25, 30 years ago. So that's good. Whenever we stand together, whenever there's advocacy, whenever people, you know, say enough, things change. And so that's really good. When I was in university, dolphins were being caught in the nets that are used for tuna, and they were dying by the thousands. There was a campaign and people stood up, and that changed. You know, today there's very little mortality because of tuna fisheries, but other things have gone much worse. We have lost, you know, entire species. There's several marine species that have already gone extinct, and many others that are on their way to extinction, including important species like sharks. We kill 70 million sharks a year, Laura. That's baffling to me. That's just incredible to even think that we can on a mass scale slaughter wildlife like that. Some species of sharks, for example, oceanic whitetips, are only down to 10% of what they used to be. Oceanic whitetips were the most abundant predator on our planet, on land or in the ocean. And they're almost extinct now. How did that happen? Well, it's all related to how we catch food in the ocean. Overfishing is a huge issue. How we catch the fish is terrible. Long lines, which are these lines that are put in the ocean, and they each meter, there's an individual line with a hook and a bait, and they just leave them there, and they catch anything that comes into this hook. So sea turtles, seabirds, sharks, thousands of animals dying in the ocean where nobody sees it. So overfishing is a big problem, and addressing it is difficult. Because there's very little accountability in many, many countries, even though there's laws, they're not enforced. It's very frustrating. Pollution is a big problem. All the stuff that washes from land into the ocean, especially plastic these days. So I remember being a little girl and, we didn't have the issues we have right now with trash and plastic on beaches. You know, I can say that in my lifetime, I remember when plastic bags first came to the grocery stores where my mother used to shop in Mexico. Before that, she used to have a shopping bag. And in my lifetime, we've seen just this explosion of plastic everywhere. And I know that if we created it, we can fix it. So those are some of the changes. But I think the most dramatic, of course, is climate change. Climate change causes so many disruptions to the chemistry of an ecosystem we barely understand. And when people think about ocean water, they think that it's just like plain water, but it's actually a broth of living organisms. So if you were to drink a gulp of water, you'd be drinking a lot of plankton and all the little creatures that actually give life to the ocean and to this planet. Because half of the oxygen on this planet is created by plankton. You can't even see it. But as we put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, it's absorbed by the ocean, and the ocean becomes more acidic. It's literally an acid. And animals can't survive in that. So it's those changes that we cannot see that are really dangerous, because they are going to creep up on us. And before we know it, you know, big changes that are impossible to revert are going to happen. And that to me is terrifying.
Yeah. I have been last year in December, I was in Cape Town, and you could go through an exhibition, that it's the word, an exhibition about sharks, and they had a huge wall, and there were I think it was 70,000 sharks, and there was a watch on the wall where it was like ticking, and it just said the amount of sharks being killed just that day. And I remember standing in front of that wall, and I was looking at that number, and I think I was there at 11:30 in the morning, and it was like already like 27,000 sharks being killed just until that hour of the day. And I remember I was just standing there, and I was crying, because I the number, it was so insane. It was so, and I couldn't understand that how is that even possible? I mean,
it's devastating, you know. So sharks in particular, because we are killing them for their fins, and that's a trade that's still happening, but we're also killing them for food. And so a lot of people don't even know that they're sold in supermarkets around the world, and they come with names that sometimes are not even, you know, you don't think, oh, shark. They'll sell it like dogfish, you know, or just white flesh. And you don't even know that you're eating shark. But it's an active fishery. In many places, they kill them for bait to catch other species. And a lot of it is just bycatch, you know, they're getting caught by accident. So, you know, I challenge humanity to think about how we can do better to support these ecosystems. It's crazy. But the truth is the same for dolphins, you know? Dolphins and marine mammals are killed by the hundreds of thousands, Laura. It's incredible. But it happens out there in the ocean. People don't know, they don't realize. So bringing that story to a place where people can see it, they can react to it, and then they are offered an opportunity to help change policy, to change technology, to change attitudes. I think it's going to be your generation, you know, younger people that are going to be so aware and so inspired to do better.
How, like, for everyone listening right now as individuals, like, what can we do? I mean, I think I sign every petition you put, like, on Sea Legacy or on your page, but, like, maybe you can talk about petitions, like, how does it work, but also what else can we do as, like, individuals to change something? Because I think sometimes people feel so, as you said, it happens, like, somewhere out in the ocean. It's, like, boats that are like factories themselves so big that you think like, okay, me as an individual, what can I do? So do you have like ideas what people listening right now could do?
So we have spent a lot of time studying, you know, what are those actions that people can take that actually make a difference? And it's very different for every issue. You know, there's no single bulletproof action, but the most important thing we can do each as individual people is to care. Because the minute we become apathetic and we stop caring, that's when, you know, politicians and industry run rampant. So we have to remember that it's only been when people have stood up and voiced their opposition that things have changed. So yes, I know that we're all tired of signing petitions. And I think, you know, there's so many groups like change.org and Avaaz putting petitions out there. A problem with those is that you almost never know how it ends. You know, you sign the petition and then you don't know what happened. So at Sea Legacy, we wanted to build a storytelling loop where if I say, Laura, this is happening, you know, you can see the story, and then I ask you to sign a petition, I need to be able to tell you how the story ends so that you know that your small action, the 2 seconds that you took to sign a petition or send a tweet, actually have enormous impact. And in fact, it's the only thing that changes the world. And it's the power of the people standing together to voice, you know, a desire for a different planet. And it's the only thing that's going to change. So whether it's, sometimes it's the target is an individual politician, you know, it's the one guy that can change the law. And so we all tweet together to say, please change, or to congratulate a politician that's done something correctly and say, thank you, let's do more of that. And so if we make that easy for you, and if you trust that we're actually taking your signature to a place that matters, you're going to be willing to do it over and over and over again.
And what is about the decisions we do as a consumer? Like, what can we do as a consumer to contribute in a positive way?
I think our actions as consumers are very important, because we make so many choices every day. But it is this type of action that changes a whole industry that really has impact. Because, you know, it's not your fault that your sushi comes in a plastic tray. It's a whole industry that enables it. So yes, you have to care, and you not only have to stop buying that, you have to talk to the person behind the counter to say, I don't want that anymore. You know, I'll come by and buy your sushi when you present it in a different way. And if you are the only person saying it, it's not going to change. But if it's all of us saying, no, I don't want a straw, I didn't ask for a straw, but thank you, you know, they have to hear it over and over and over again. And it takes a lot of courage and determination to be that painfully difficult person that's always commenting on these things. But if we don't say it out loud, why would the people selling it create change? And so that's one part of it. The other part of it is, you know, the young people feel like their vote doesn't matter. But in fact, it's the most important tool we have to change the way that the story ends, because we have the power to elect people who care, as opposed to elect people who are only thinking about their next election or the bottom line or the economy. We need to elect people who have the kind of values that are, you know, sustainable for Earth. And, you know, it's difficult to tell who's who when you're looking at all these politicians, but they're all on social media. we can learn a lot about the people who are running for office, not just the United States, but around the world, and exercise our right as voters to voice the kind of planet we want to live in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing. I have one more question regarding the way we are with animals in general. So on your Instagram, you also did some posts regarding a connection between Corona and the how do you call it, like the wild animal extinction markets as well. Yeah. So could you maybe help us to understand in which way there is actually a connection between how we are with especially our wildlife animals and illnesses that we as humans have by now?
It's a very big story. It's probably one of the biggest stories on our planet. The way, the cruelty that humans have towards animals, and it's expressed not just in our fisheries and all those animals that die, but also in agricultural systems and how we grow the food that we eat in a very cruel and, you know, methodical way. But it's especially evident in whenever, you know, we take animals away from the wilderness, we bring wild creatures close to humanity. And in many places around the world, in Asia and South America, I mean, I've seen them everywhere in Africa, wild animals are still part of the menu, are still actively hunted for people to eat. And while this is important for remote, especially indigenous communities, because sometimes that's the only thing they have to eat, whenever that becomes a commercial enterprise and there's, you know, a lot of trading of wild creatures in markets, you can imagine an animal that is in a remote part of the forest and it has a virus. And because it's been there safely quarantined in nature, it's never come in close contact to humans. But viruses are very adaptable and mutable creatures. They're actually a chemical unit. It doesn't become alive until it enters its host. So when you bring an animal that's hosting a virus close to domestic animals and to humans, you give that virus an opportunity to jump species. And this is not a myth, you know, this happens all the time. As a matter of fact, almost all human diseases that are virus related, this is what happens. You know, they jump from one species to another. And when you have crowded conditions, you know, that virus can exploit that and very quickly spread. Now you got people getting into airplanes and traveling internationally, and that virus, you know, used to be in a remote corner somewhere in the wild, it's now traveling in airplanes and buses. So the solution is, I think, you know, in general, for the health of our planet, that we all try to eat lower in the food chain, become more plant-based. You know, the cruelty towards animals is, you know, it's a terrible symptom of the lack of humanity. But especially when it comes to disease, leaving wild animals in the wild is the safest way to prevent viruses from jumping to humans. And so we are calling for banning of these wildlife markets. I say, you know, it took one man with one shoe and one bomb, and now forever, whenever we are on an airplane, we have to take our shoes off before we get on the plane. Somebody walked into a market somewhere. I mean, in this case, it was China, but it could have been anywhere. And, you know, that animal that was brought in who had a virus, it's like detonating a nuclear bomb on humanity. You know, we have to ban it.
That's such a good picture to see it that way, because the effect is worldwide and not just like in a singular place, but everywhere. And you just said...
And viruses, you know, they're not...
Sorry, yeah.
Viruses are not bad. No, they live in nature. They're only bad when we bring them in close contact with humans. And so.
And you just said you're working on banning like wildlife markets. And I'm really also reading a lot about it right now. What can we do to help closing those markets? Because I mean, especially like pictures I saw in Asia, and I mean, it's dogs also, it's cats, it's, I don't make any difference between a cow, a pig, and but I think for many people it makes a difference to see like there are lions, there are like all these beautiful, amazing animals who are just in little cages, and I think it's one of the coolest things. Yeah, for me it's heartbreaking. What can we do to help closing markets like this, or in general, how can we just stop doing all these things?
Well, you know, not participating in the wildlife trade is really important. You know, people that buy fur or that buy animal parts or, you know, medicinal stuff, you know, that all makes it complicit in being part of that. But we put together a petition that is, it's actually a declaration that is intended to go to the World Health Organization, because this is a global health issue, to work with governments to, you know, implement these bans. And these have to be done at an international, national, local level. You know, it's not something that's going to happen overnight, but it really needs to be like a global effort. So we have a declaration that you can sign. If you go to Extinction Ends Here or End the Trade, there's two organizations that take you to the same, two websites that take you to the same declaration. You can sign your voice there. You know, we already have, I think, 80,000 signatures. We have 250 international nonprofit organizations, and it just keeps growing. The little video that we created explaining how the virus jumped has been seen millions and millions of times. So hashtag Extinction Ends Here, and you can find a way to sign this declaration, to add your name and your voice, and it takes all of us.
Amazing. Thank you so much for creating that. I will put this definitely in the show notes of the podcast as well, so people can go directly there and sign it.
Yeah. We have a whole toolkit, you know, that you can put there and people can download it with a video, with all sorts of things to add your voice.
That's amazing. So what is your vision for the next 10 years? Like, what do you hope to be able to change? What do you see is changing? And what is your, like, Christina personal's vision for the earth and for the ocean?
I love that question, Laura. Thank you for asking that. I think we are at a crossroads. Today is the first day that Canada is going back to work, you know, slowly reopening after the coronavirus. Some countries are just starting to see the worst of their spikes and people dying. But we are at a crossroads because we have an opportunity to say, you know, we're going to come out of this pandemic smarter. We're going to create a greener, kinder, safer world that doesn't leave, you know, humanity or nature behind. It's not all about the bottom line and see who can make more money, you know, but it's about how do we build a better world. And we have an opportunity right now. The alternative is we go back to the way that things were. And it's just a matter of time before there's another virus, another pandemic, or there's another climate change event, you know. Unless we change our ways, this is just going to continue happening. So we have a moment, we have a chance. I know that Americans are voting in the fall. They're going to the polls to elect a president who can see this clearly and who has a plan to help fix it. Or they could go back to whatever they're doing right now and see if that gets us any closer. But it's true of so many countries where we have an opportunity to elect people with a vision. You know, I see what the Prime Minister of New Zealand is capable of doing. She's a woman, she's a mother, she's super young, but she sees clearly the path for the future she wants for her child. And so I'd say let's elect more women, more women of color, more young women. Let's build a nicer, kinder world.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think it's so many things you said that also I see the same way that many people think that their vote doesn't count or they are frustrated by politics, but it doesn't make it better if you don't vote. Like this is not going to make it better to be like, okay, then I just don't care anymore. Because as you said, the moment you stop caring, and I think that was so important, they really also clicked with me, the moment you stop caring, you just give someone else the power to do whatever they want to do, and to go back to care, to actually really, really care about the ocean, about the animals, about our earth, about our home planet. I mean, it's our home, and what we are doing is, it's just insane. It's just really not showing the best of us. Yeah.
I know. And I feel like I've spent my entire career, you know, in this mindset of, you know, we have to stop, we have to change. And I've tried to yell it as loud as I can. And I've tried to share it with inspiration and with motivation and, you know, by being a role model. But it's going to take many, many more people. So that's what I want to do. I want to open a big door to say, we all can do this. We all can wear our superhero suit and start fighting for our planet, because nobody else is going to do it for us.
I have one more question. So the thing is, there are so many topics. I mean, only what we were just talking about. So there's climate change, there's the plastic in the oceans, there are the wildlife markets, there are the animals in the ocean that get caught. There are so many things. Like, what would you recommend? How do I start? Like, if someone is listening right now and is like, okay, I really want to help, and you see the things. I mean, you are out there, you are on the ocean, you see what is happening. So how don't you get overwhelmed? How don't you get like, I don't even know what to do? And it's sort of so much, because I sometimes have this feeling at night, I'm lying in my bed and I just feel like, okay, like, I don't know how to start or where to start or where to put my priority, because if I help there, then I cannot help there. So what would you say, how can we, where to start?
You're so, like, you're so right, you know, and it happens to me too, because we have allowed our planet to get to a place where nature is unraveling everywhere, where the ecosystem services, the foundation that provides the ability for life to live on this planet, is being destroyed. And the human suffering that comes with it is terrible. At the same time, you know, all of this is driven by an economic system that we are subscribing to. Capitalism, as it's described right now, it's a disease. You know, yes, I understand that we can enjoy computers and cars and things because of this system, but the price that we're paying is monumental. And it is a system that has allowed a handful of people to truly benefit and do really well for themselves at the expense of the many. So many people have been left behind by the promise of capitalism. And at the same time, nature has been sacrificed to get us to where we are in our capital reality today. The question that we need to ask going forward is not, you know, how do we create an economy that's always growing, instead of how do we create an economy that makes us healthy and happy? And we're going to need some brilliant minds. But for all of us to start today, you know, I decided, because everywhere you go, people are like, oh, you know, can you help us solve cancer? Can you help us solve, you know, child disease? I decided to focus on the environment and climate change because I saw it as something that affects everybody. Everybody. So I thought, you know, if I focus my energy on trying to fix the bigger problem, a lot of the old other smaller problems, you know, like, why is there so much cancer? Well, our planet is poisoned. But we have to subscribe to a better relationship with nature, one that doesn't destroy it. And so I would say only one is going to provide a lot of the education, the answers, the opportunities to participate, to tell you how your actions are impacting and benefiting the lives of others, the ocean. I think that's a good place to start. And I really honestly hope that many other organizations copy the idea of only one to solve other problems in the world.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you. And I also, I have this inner, like, quote I say within me, that the best thing you can do when you feel hopeless is to do something, like to get in action. The moment you then get something to do, like, this feeling of hopelessness goes away, because you have the feeling you're actually doing something. So I think it's always just important to just get doing something, instead of being like, it's so much, yeah, but then just focus on one thing and do that, and then this feeling of not being able to change something goes away, because you're actually changing something. And
yes, I say that the best antidote to fear is action. Yes. And the best antidote to hopelessness is action. Yeah, do something, anything.
Yeah, beautiful. And I love the only one platform already. I'm looking so much forward to it when it's there, and I will definitely share it in my newsletter and get it out there. So thank you so much for creating it. I have one last question I ask every of my podcast guests. So imagine it's the last day of your life. You have a beautiful life. You get very, very old. You change so much. The ocean is healed. Like, you did an amazing job. But there has been a technical problem, and everything you did is actually gone. So the platform is gone. Everything is gone. It's just you. And I would come to you, and I would give you a white sheet of paper and a pen. And I would tell you, like, Christina, so sorry. Like, all is gone, but I have here a white sheet of paper and a pen. And you can write on that white sheet of paper three wisdoms three things, if this are the only things you could leave as wisdom in the world, what would you write down on this paper to humanity?
The first one is to care, you know, not just about nature. You have to care about each other. You have to be invested in being a good human being. So care is the most important one. The second one is it's we, not me. If you're only out there for yourself, you've completely missed the point of what it means to be a good human on this planet. And the third one is just to realize that we live on this tiny little blue marble floating around in the enormity of space all alone. We have nowhere else to go. This is it. This is it. Every once in a while, Lara, somebody will say something to me like, you know, it doesn't matter if we destroy Earth because we're going to move to Mars. And I think, well, that's very silly, you know, because it's impossible. And even if you were friends with Elon Musk and you were going to go on his spaceship, you know, the minute you boarded that spaceship that's going to take you to Mars, you would get a very serious briefing. Somebody would give you instructions on how everything works, where the water comes from in the ship, how is the air produced, you know, how are you going to store your food for this long journey to Mars. You would have to learn how to survive on the spaceship. Well, our planet is no different, you know, except that we have forgotten the instruction manual for how to be good citizens of this little spaceship. And we just have to, you know, remember, you cannot destroy something that you might need later.
Thank you so much. That is so beautiful. So, Christina, thank you for sharing everything. I really want to acknowledge you for the amazing, beautiful work you do. I'm so grateful that there are people out there doing things you do and really showing us what is happening and going out there every day and not losing hope, but instead being like very pulled by this vision you have of a future with a healthy ocean. And I loved what you said, that it's our task to create an economy that makes us happy and healthy. I think that is a very, very, very good statement that people can relate to. Yeah, so thank you so much for sharing it.
People think we can't change it, and that's a mistake. You know, it's not a done deal. We can still change the way that we live on this planet. And so let's think about it. Let's put our big brains together. And it is me who's incredibly grateful, Laura. I love what you're doing. I love that you have a big audience. I love that you are bringing inspiring ideas and hope. And it's been such a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
Thank you, too. Take care and hope to see you soon. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass du ganz viel aus diesem wunderschönen Interview für dich mitnehmen konntest und dass du dich inspiriert fühlst, auch dafür loszugehen, etwas in dieser Welt zu verändern und ja, wirklich dafür einzustehen. Und ich habe da noch eine kleine persönliche Bitte. Und zwar habe ich vor 2 Wochen einen offenen Brief geschrieben an unsere Bundesministerin für Landwirtschaft, die Frau Klöckner, und habe dort in dem Brief das Thema angesprochen von der Gesetzesverlängerung für die Kassenstände von Säuen. Und vielleicht hast du das mitbekommen oder auch schon mal im Bild gesehen, wie das aussieht. Das sind Eisenkästen, in denen die Säue eingesperrt sind und in denen sie sich weder umdrehen können, noch ihre Gliedmaßen ausstrecken können oder sonst irgendwas und ja, dort einfach eingesperrt in diesem Kasten leben müssen für die Fleischindustrie. Dort ihre Ferkel gebären müssen und es ist einfach eine absolute Katastrophe, ein unglaubliches Tierleid, was da stattfindet für diese wahnsinnig intelligenten, empathischen Tiere. Und ich habe da einen offenen Brief geschrieben, es haben schon über 10.000 Menschen unterschrieben und ich tue den Link hier auch in die Shownotes und ich würde mich unendlich freuen, wenn du dir die Zeit nimmst, diese Petition zu unterschreiben, in der Hoffnung, dass sich da in Zukunft etwas ändern wird. Und ja, nimm dir da bitte, bitte, bitte die Zeit, unterschreib das, den Link findest du in den Shownotes. Tausend Dank dafür. Und ich freue mich natürlich auch, wenn du bei mir bei Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, und mir deine Gedanken da lässt. Was ist es, was du in der Welt verändern möchtest? Was hast du aus der Folge für dich mitgenommen? Und was ich am Anfang schon gesagt habe, du kannst dich jetzt anmelden für Löwenherz. Ich freue mich riesig, wenn wir uns da sehen. Und du kannst am Wochenende dabei sein bei unserem wundervollen Community-Event, dem Team Liebe Wohnzimmer-Event, wo wir gemeinsam feiern, tanzen werden, wo wir singen werden, meditieren werden, Yoga machen werden, es ganz viel Input gibt. Und ja, ich freue mich, wenn du da dabei bist. Fühl dich jetzt von Herzen umarmt, lass es dir gut gehen. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Danke, dass du diesen Podcast unterstützt. Danke, dass wir gemeinsam diesen Weg gehen können. Und ich bin stolz auf dich. Ich glaube an dich und danke, dass es dich gibt. Gib nicht auf, egal was gerade los ist in deinem Leben, mach weiter und ich denke an dich. Rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.